Welcome, one and all, to Project Geekology, episode 65, coming to you from a galaxy far, far away.
That was a terrible Clone Wars intro by yours truly, me, Dakota. I'm joined, as always, with
Anthony.
And we're going to be talking all things Star Wars Rebels Season 5 today, also known as Ahsoka, the live-action series on Disney+.
The unofficial... No, actually, it is the official Season 5 of Rebels, but it's just not called Rebels.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, actually, because while yes, it is the natural next season of the Star Wars Rebels series, the shift in focus towards it being about Ahsoka and her master, her apprentice, and the struggles that she's going on and searching for Ezra and Thrawn and everything, I think it's really interesting, the dynamic shift from the ghost team to now Ahsoka's little bubble that kind of orbits that team. So we're going to talk about that and more in just a minute. Anthony, what have you been up to these past few weeks?
Well, I was on vacation last week. I was in Tennessee visiting some family. It was nice. I was able to hang out and kind of get away from the insanity of Florida, because sometimes Florida can, it's like getting so packed with all these people. A lot of your peeps are coming down from New York. They want to live in Florida. And
snowbirds, bro.
Yeah. So it was nice getting out there and hanging out and spending some time kind of out in nature. And when you live in South Florida, or just Florida in general, it's pretty flat. I mean, sure, you might get to some places where there's like hills, but it's nothing like Tennessee.
It's flat, flat, flat.
And so, yeah, it's just, yeah, you get some like really windy roads and like really like hilly. And especially like when this time I didn't drive through the mountains, but the last time I was there, I remember driving through the mountains and it's just, yeah, super windy. It's not something that I'm used to. So it was interesting and it was cool being able to see fall was like really like in full swing at that moment. So
I'm sure it was beautiful. And you were in the Smokies, right?
I was close to the Smokies, but I did actually go over to the Smokies because I spent some time in Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. So
okay,
yeah,
cool. Did you visit Dollywood?
Yes, actually I did.
I was wondering why you were in Gatlinburg. Yeah.
So, well, I went to Gatlinburg.
I haven't been there since I was a kid.
So, I went to Gatlinburg. So, I went to that area twice. The first time was to go to Dollywood with the family, and then the next time was to celebrate my birthday.
Dude, 32.
Yes.
How does it feel? I mean, I'm also a third now, but it kind of feels weird.
Dakota leveled up a couple days ago. So, I was doing that, really spending most of my time doing that on vacation, and before that obviously preparing for this episode. We wanted to record this episode before I went on vacation, but that didn't pan out, so you know, we're getting this one out to you a little bit on the later side, but you know, we wanted to get this out to you nonetheless.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good show. A lot's happened in the past couple weeks. You were talking to me a little bit about some of the events that happened at BlizzCon over the past weekend. Are you excited about some of the revelations that Blizzard has unveiled for some of their games, Overwatch 2 and World of Warcraft, and so on?
So, they did a lot. I felt like they announced a lot, and some stuff I was not expecting. And so, I mean, we knew about, for Overwatch 2, we knew about the new hero, Mauga, for a while. I mean, I call him Maui because he almost looks like Maui. The Overwatch version of Maui.
Maui from Moana, specifically.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, he was interesting. They had a playtest for him this weekend so that we could try him out. But he does not release officially until the next competitive season. And they also announced a couple of other heroes that are coming out. One called Venture. That's a DPS hero. And they actually showed some gameplay of her. And then there's another support coming out called Space Ranger, and she looks pretty interesting.
That's cool. That's really cool. Last time I was at BlizzCon, I had the opportunity to playtest the Vaporware, well, the now Vaporware game, StarCraft Ghost, which was actually really fun when I played it.
Oh, wow. So you actually got hands-on for that.
I got hands-on for a game that never existed.
Dude, yeah, I've seen gameplay of that, and that I'm really, like, upset that game never came out. Like,
yeah, I think I was too young to really appreciate whether or not it was a good game. I just knew that it was a new game.
Right, at the time, right.
You know, like, it was, and I was only playing a small amount of it. So I couldn't even tell you, like, what I remember about it besides, like, just, like, brief glimpses of it. But I remember liking it. Yeah, it just never panned out for whatever reason, and probably for the best, because then they focused more on World of Warcraft over the past, over the next couple years after that game was discontinued.
Right. I would say that World of Warcraft, I mean, you got Diablo, that Diablo 3 that was thrown into there, and StarCraft 2. While we've gotten a couple of Diablo games in the recent years, there's the mobile one that came out, and then Diablo 4, and it's been a really, really long time since we've gotten a StarCraft game. They haven't really done anything with StarCraft, and so I didn't watch everything in BlizzCon, but I don't think that there was anything StarCraft announced. If anything StarCraft was announced, they would be like super headlines. Like, people would be like, StarCraft 3 is coming out, you know, like, it would be one of the major headlines that I saw, you know, when looking for pretty much highlights of BlizzCon. But I obviously watched some of the World of Warcraft stuff, some of the Overwatch 2 stuff. Diablo 4 does have an expansion that's coming out. It's called Vessel of Hatred, and it's going to cover Mephisto and stuff. World of Warcraft had an interesting announcement. Now, we knew that there was most likely going to be an Overwatch expansion announced, but not 3.
Yeah, they announced 3, and it was all part of this giant campaign or story or narrative that they're calling the World Soul Saga.
Yes,
very cool. I mean, just the concept of an overarching 3 expansion story is pretty intriguing to me. I haven't, you know, actively played World of Warcraft in some time, but this does excite me just by proxy of how much I spent on the game, you know, in my youth, you know.
Right. I guess they're releasing enough content that it's too much to release in one expansion, that they want to break it up into 3.
My guess is it's kind of like an expansion and a half of actual gameplay and new content. And basically, instead of releasing, you know, 2 small expansions, they're releasing kind of like 3 small expansions. And it's just easier to focus on one at a time, because I think they mentioned that it was coming out one every year for the next 3 years.
So yeah, it's within the next 3 years they're gonna release an expansion, and then yeah, it's gonna just cover this whole overarching story. And so I mean, obviously you're gonna get like new dungeons, there's gonna be new zones, there's gonna be different raids and stuff. Honestly, to tell you the truth, an announcement that was made for WoW, and I was actually surprised that they did it. I didn't think that they were going to do it, but they're doing Cataclysm Classic. And I didn't think that they were going to do that, because that's like almost modern WoW, you know? Classic is, it's older, but like, it's after that point that I would consider it modern WoW. A lot of major stuff has happened. I mean, dude, like, Darnassus gets destroyed later on in the thing. I mean, there's a lot that happens, but I consider everything that Cataclysm and up like kind of like modern WoW. So I was surprised that they were going to go through with that. I wondered, like, when's the stopping point? Are they just going to release all this stuff?
You know, they may just be planning to, you know, eventually release all the way up until where they're at right now and just continue the game forward in the regular game. Basically, if they can make you pay for the game twice, again and again and again.
I mean, but you're not even like paying for it twice. It's like coming out free. You know, it's like as long as you have like an active subscription, you know? So, I mean, at least I didn't pay for any of the vanilla WoW stuff.
Okay.
So they did that. There's also, so WoW Classic is also, so they're doing some changes to vanilla, like, you know, just base World of Warcraft. You can actually play vanilla WoW, like it's its own separate thing. And then they have a version of WoW that just is just going with every expansion. But there's something called Season of Discovery that is coming out for vanilla, and it's gonna have like new content and like features and parts that weren't like in the original vanilla WoW. So
it's like a multiverse of different types of
Probably. It's like content that was cut that never made the final product, that they're, I guess at the time it wasn't polished, but I guess now it's polished enough that they're like, we want to put this. There was probably an original vision that they had, and then eventually it got to what it became, you know?
Sure.
So I thought that was interesting. There was a lot of, yeah, World of Warcraft stuff, but
do we have any like updates on like, are they still raising the level cap for these new expansions, or have they stopped doing that at a certain point?
They cut down the level cap to, and was it like Shadowlands? They cut it like way down. I think it was down to 60 or 70. They like brought it down.
Oh, really? That's weird. I guess that makes sense when you consider like the power creep.
Right.
Like kind of reduces what you can do once you reach a certain level.
So it's 70. Like, it's 70 now. So they shifted it, yeah. Dude, because it got up to like 120. And then I guess they're like, man, we don't want to... I guess they didn't want to have people leveling up all the way up to like 200, you know? So sure. They decided to...
And I'm sure many people would have.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah.
I mean, a lot
but
of people...
But it becomes unattainable.
A lot of the... There's a lot of players that, you know, they'll hop onto their mains because they're already at the max cap. They'll raise their level up the next 10 levels, you know, maybe mess around on their character for a little bit and then go create another character. So
yeah.
And there's also Blizzard also released a mobile game. They released the Warcraft Rumble game. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, was it Clans Royale?
Clash of Clans.
Yeah, Clash Royale or whatever. So they changed it. I think it was supposed to be like World of Warcraft Starlight Rumble or something like that, but they just or Warcraft Starlight Rumble, but they just dropped it down to Warcraft Rumble. So that came out on Friday of, yeah, like last Friday's, I think, with the kickoff of BlizzCon. So
have you tried it out yet or no?
I have, yeah. I messed around with it a little bit. It's interesting. I mean, I might, you know, mess with it from time to time, but I kind of fallen out of those tower defense type games. It's not really... Is it tower defense? I mean, it's those ones that you like drag and drop.
I know what you're talking about. You like build your base up and you hope.
But it's not even a base. Come. Like you're not even building up a base. Oh. It's just like you have like your one side and like you like send people over to the other side to attack, and then the other side will send people to attack you. It's really weird. I don't know if you've ever played Clash Royale or Clans Royale, whatever the heck it's called. Clash of Clans Royale.
Yeah, I've played it.
It's literally like that.
I got you.
So, I mean, yeah, other than that, what have you been up to? Did you look at any of the BlizzCon stuff?
Well, I saw the three expansions that they, you know, like, tease, and I thought that was pretty cool. It did get me thinking maybe I want to eventually jump back in, but, like, I'm not mentally prepared for that that time commitment yet. But in terms of, like, what I've been up to, Marvel released this big old book. The Marvel Studios, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, an official timeline book. It's pretty big. It's the exact same size as the Star Wars Timelines book that came out a couple months back.
It looks like very similar, actually.
Yeah, it's the same company that produced it. It's not the same writers, but it's kind of displayed, and all the events are displayed in a very similar way to the Star Wars Timelines book. So I've been spending a lot of my time trying to get through that. I'm going to be doing a full review on the channel Geekotique soon, and if you guys are interested in that, please go check out my channel in the show notes below.
Yes, they'll be in the show notes. There's a collaboration between Overwatch and a K-pop group.
Wait, was D.Va involved somehow?
D.Va was in it, so was Kiriko, Brigitte, Tracer, who am I missing? Sombra. Oh my gosh.
So most of their women.
There's somebody else that's
Symmetra?
No, it wasn't Symmetra. Why am I like losing it?
I don't know, man.
Like, I don't
all that time spent in the mountains.
You know what's funny was that they even gave Junkrat like a skin part of that collaboration too. And like he's like the one character that you wouldn't expect to have a K-pop skin.
I respect it though. It's a shame Roadhog didn't get one.
That would have been funny. And honestly, to tell you the truth, a lot of people probably would have loved it. People would have been like, yes, Roadhog, K-pop. This is, you know, unlikely, but, you know, I don't know. Who knows? He likes his little, like, Pachamaris. Okay, yeah, no, I had it right. Yeah, it was just, I just looked it up. It was Brigitte, D.Va, Kiriko, Sombra, Tracer, and then Junkrat got his own skin. Look at that. I don't know if you can see it.
Pull it back a little bit. Oh, no, it's like too bright. I'll look it up in a little bit.
Yeah.
That's cool, though.
So anything else that you've been up to? I know that you just said that you're going to come out with a Marvel Timeline video.
Yes, so it'll be a Marvel Timeline video review of the book specifically. And then I'll probably do another video where I'll adjust my own like MCU timeline to, you know, best meet the new official standard, because a few things are moved around. Some things make a little bit of sense, some things are kind of infuriatingly placed, but that's just me.
You're probably anyway. Just like, yeah, they needed me. They should have had me there.
You know what? I'm not going to say it, but I'll let other people say it. So thank you. So what was I going to say? Oh, and I have some other timelines like that I'm working on. So I made the One Piece timeline that I was talking about last time I was on the show.
Right, on the One Piece episode?
Yes, on the One Piece episode that we did last time. I finally did the One Piece live action timeline, and I dived into the history of basically everything that is said to have happened within the live action series, like when it takes place and all that. And then I kind of compared it to what was said and explained in the manga and anime so that I could, you know, just get a more accurate look at everything. But that was fun. I have two other timelines that I'm kind of working on in like various amounts right now. So I'm doing a extended universe Frozen timeline. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. It's probably going to bomb initially, and then we'll pick up, like kids will find it eventually. So that'll be nice. But yeah, basically there's a bunch of Frozen books, kind of like the Star Wars extended universe before Disney took over, had like just tons of, you know, extended universe content that wasn't officially canon but was kind of lore friendly. This is the same kind of deal with Frozen, where that's at right now. So I've gone through all the books, I've gone through all the comics, and basically just mapping it out right now. And after that, my big plan is to do the Monsterverse. So Godzilla, King Kong, you know, the Skull Island stuff, all the way up to the new show that they're coming out with, Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
You know what would be interesting to cover? You know, it would be like kind of fun, I think. But you're talking about the Monsterverse. Wouldn't it be cool at some point if we covered the Universal Monsters?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that was really the first shared universe in Hollywood.
Yeah, so that's isn't that insane? Cool. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, huge deal.
So I think that would be cool. And I think it would be cool to like look into the connective tissue of those, if there is any, you know?
Well, there is definitely some connective tissue. It's not as pronounced as, obviously, like, the MCU.
Right, right. Even, like, but Godzilla and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, even, like, the Godzilla stuff was, there was some chronology. Like, right. There was, like, I think in, like, the third or fourth Godzilla movie, like, he fights off Rodan, and, like, Rodan is, like, covered in a mound of rock, and that's how he like defeats him. And then later on they made a Rodan movie, and he came out of that very like same like boulders of rocks, and he started terrorizing again. So there's some like connective tissue between all those, at least early Godzilla movies, but like the Toho monster movies. But yeah, so that would be really cool to cover the Universal monster stuff.
Yes, definitely. So, I mean, I don't know if you have anything else that you want to talk about. We're about 25 minutes in. Would you like to get into the meat of the episode? Well, I think that before we actually talk about anything spoilery, I would say if you haven't seen Ahsoka, go watch it before listening to this.
Yeah, we get into some pretty heavy stuff here when it comes to stuff that's unveiled about the Star Wars universe, and we're going to be talking about everything. There's going to be a lot of fan gushing, fan theorizing, and just overall discussions about like the major themes and happenings throughout these, what was it, 8 episodes?
Yes. Yeah. So I know I had asked you. So I know I had asked you before. But now that we've watched the entirety of Ahsoka, all the episodes are out, what are your thoughts on watching Rebels, even Clone Wars, before Ahsoka? Have your thoughts on that changed?
So last time, I believe that my thoughts were, it definitely heightens your appreciation of what happens, or just the, you know, getting to know the characters and like seeing them in live action. It's a huge moment for Star Wars fans of the, you know, the animated world of Star Wars to be able to see these characters in live action, in like a realistic depiction of the characters, like from their you know, animated counterparts. I said that from my personal experience, I have seen all the animated stuff. My wife has seen all the animated stuff. But my parents have never seen any of the animated stuff. But they really like the show, like all the way to the end. They may not have picked up on some of the bigger themes, especially the, you know, some teases that you may experience in the final episode of Ahsoka, but they were able to enjoy what they saw because it felt like new and fresh Star Wars to them. And I actually feel like it probably feels more new and more fresh to them, having not seen the animated series before, than it does to us who have seen the animated series before. Because a lot of what we see in this does, I mean, it's not a retread. It's definitely not a retread, but it's a follow-up to the series. So it feels like a natural progression of Star Wars versus someone who's coming in totally blind to this era. It probably feels wholly new, you know?
Right, right. So for me, I'm definitely with you that you can watch this show without watching the animated series and still enjoy it. I definitely think that you can enjoy it, but I do believe that there is a lot being missed if you don't watch the animated series, especially Rebels, because it is a natural progression. You're like, okay, you know, you're coming into the show, they lay some of the basic groundwork, but if you're coming into the show without watching Rebels, you don't know why Thrawn is so bad. You know, you just know that he's okay, he's an Imperial, he imposes a threat, but why does he impose a threat? They show a little bit of what his mind is, but you understand him a lot better in Rebels. You know, okay, Ahsoka's relationship with Anakin, they explain it a little bit, they show a little bit of it. You know, I'd say even watching Clone Wars, not all of it, but Clone Wars, at least some of it, to see that relationship and to see what she was talking about. Because she had a moment where she talks about how, you know, while not everybody was always there for her, Anakin always was. And you see that, especially in a moment, and I'm going to be crossing into Clone Wars, where she has some issues with the Jedi Council and something happens and the Jedi Council turned their back on her. But Anakin's the one that really gives her the benefit of the doubt, you know?
100%. Yeah. And there's a lot that happens at the very end of Rebels.
Yes.
That they kind of very quickly gloss over and they expect you to know. Like, why is Ezra and Thrawn suddenly nowhere in the known galaxy?
Right, right, exactly.
They don't really explain that in Ahsoka. They just tell you they're not anywhere in the known galaxy. At the end of Rebels, we know that Ezra used the Force to get the Purrgil to basically, like, latch onto Thrawn's Star Destroyer and just send him away from the galaxy so that, you know, he wouldn't stop being a jerk to the Rebels, basically.
Right, right. And yeah, that's another thing, like, you know, the Purrgil, like, you're seeing these space whales, you know? So yeah. There's definitely, like, a heavy significance in Rebels, and like you said, especially towards the end of that series. Like I said, you can enjoy that show, absolutely enjoy that show, without watching the animated series. But there's definitely going to, I personally believe that there's going to be a lot of holes for you if you don't.
I actually saw someone online, someone I actually like really respect for, you know, just in general. And they had I would say it was a bad take, where basically they were upset that they were kind of left out of the loop because they hadn't seen Clone Wars they hadn't seen Clone Wars. Like, and they were feeling that, like, super left out of the loop when those giant statues appeared at the end of the final episode. Anyone who's watched Clone Wars can, you know, deduct that it's the Mortis gods, but for whatever reason he didn't realize that until he turned on the social media, and he got, like, kind of salty about it. And I thought this was just a bad take. Like, if you choose not to watch it, you can't be mad at it. You know, it's one of those, like, it's a weird thing.
Right.
But I can see people being a little bit upset about not being able to understand every single thing that they're seeing, where other people can.
Right. And the thing is that Dave Filoni told us a while ago that this is a follow-up to Rebels, you know? He wanted to do this. And this show is definitely mostly, not entirely, but mostly for fans of the animated series. I mean, that is where he got his start, man. He got his start in the animated field, and even before Clone Wars, like, he was doing stuff, dude. We talked about how he worked on Avatar The Last Airbender. He worked for Nickelodeon. He's worked for Cartoon Network. So that's where his start was, you know? And then that's where he got his foot in the door of Star Wars, got the respect of George Lucas. And so really, yeah, like, that's what this show is. Dude, you could pick a movie in the middle of a series, watching and enjoy it, but you're not going to understand everything unless you watch the beginning of the movie series, you know? So that's the thing. And I understand that animated might not be everybody's cup of tea, but there is a lot of very strong storytelling that is happening in these cartoons, you know? Mm-hmm. That if you overlook the fact that it's animated, you will absolutely enjoy, I mean, do Bad Batch. The Clone Wars has an amazing story, especially those like last few seasons. Dude, season 7 was just like, it was a beautiful send-off. And I mean, Rebels.
Peak, yeah.
And in Rebels, I mean, there's just, you know, I'm not going to talk about Resistance. That's definitely for a younger crowd. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, Resistance, the High Republic adventure show that is like for kids. That's like a different kind of series. It's not expected that anyone needs to watch it. It's just for kids, really. But it does add a little bit of lore here and there. And I think Resistance is even semi... Well, I haven't actually watched most of Resistance. It's semi-important to the sequel trilogy in terms of like certain background characters. But, you know, you're saying like how much story that the cartoons add to the overall Star Wars story. Back when I was reviewing, and I literally read cover to cover the Star Wars Timelines book just because I wanted to get the full experience, you know, from the beginning of the galaxy far, far away to the end, as far as we know it. And that thing covered not only the movies, not only the TV shows, but it also covered the cartoons, obviously. It covered comics, it covered books, it covered like short stories. It was literally every single thing. And it's my favorite reference book ever. But what I want to say is, like, if all you have seen is the movies, you're only going to understand 25% of that book. There's so much Star Wars out there. And even like just the Clone Wars, it took up like 40 pages worth of like timeline stuff, because there's so many episodes over 7 seasons, plus all the little stories that they've like written in the comics or the books like regarding the Clone Wars era. So I don't know, I mean, there's so much out there. And what I loved about Ahsoka was how effortlessly it was able to bridge into Clone Wars era with those flashbacks in the World Between Worlds. Well, they weren't really flashbacks. It was like a vision that the Force was presenting to Ahsoka. But man, when it went back to like certain battles throughout the Clone Wars, that was so cool.
Right. Dude, when I seen Hayden Christensen and he did that Clone Wars Anakin, he was like, "Hey, Snips." I was like,
you can tell he's a fan of Clone Wars Anakin too. You could tell like he was playing that part. You know, they even did his hair like Clone Wars Anakin.
Yes, yes. You know, man, let me tell you, I absolutely love that Hayden Christensen is kind of getting the appreciation that he always deserved. You know, a lot of what happened wasn't really his fault, man. He was just doing what was written, you know?
Yeah. So one thing people blame Hayden for is actually just kind of like bad writing on Lucas's part, or bad directing on Lucas's part, you know, one or the other, sometimes both, but combined with someone who's not, you know, directed to act it out in a certain way, it comes out jumbled and clunky, you know. And I think people remember that about Hayden's performance when it shouldn't really be held against him, because there's a lot of clunkiness in the prequels, even though I love them.
Right, know? Right.
I can't say that they're perfect movies by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But yeah, seeing his redemption tour from, you know, Obi-Wan, Kenobi, and now even to a bigger degree, I think, in Ahsoka. I don't know, actually, because he did play Darth Vader in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, but, you know, actual on-screen, you know, his face being on screen, I think a little bit more time was spent in Ahsoka.
So in Obi-Wan, we got him in Darth Vader, but this is now redeemed Anakin, you know?
Yes.
So this is the Anakin that we knew before he fell, but like more enlightened, you know. It's like he learned a lesson at this point. It was just awesome seeing him, the duel between Ahsoka, you know. It's like, oh my gosh, man, it's like so nice to see Hayden doing this stuff. And man, let me tell you, Hayden really put in the work back in those old movies, man. He put in the work for those duels.
Yeah, and you could tell he put the work in for this one.
Yes, too. Yes.
Like, that was one of the cleanest duels in like Disney Star Wars era, basically.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely brought back some feelings from the prequel era. I would say about the prequel era is that, like you said, they're not perfect. A lot of the prequels are fixed are in the books and the animated series.
Totally. And that's one of the biggest things about Clone Wars, is that if there's anything in the prequels that you aren't particularly fond of, go watch Clone Wars specifically, because that kind of wraps up all the loose threads
that appeared
throughout the prequels. Or anything that you didn't like specifically, they will definitely expand upon in Clone Wars.
And it gives you a better understanding of Ahsoka's relationship with Anakin, her relationship with the clones, why the clones did what they did, and it just makes a lot of sense, and it gives you a basis for some of the characters that you have in Rebels, like some of the clones, you know, like Rex being like the most popular one, but you know, he's shown in him, who was it, Rex, Cody, the three clones in Rebels.
There's so many clones. What are you talking about?
The three that they met that was in that old, ATST or whatever it was called. You know, the old Republic Walker.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You want me to look it up really quick?
I mean, sure, if you want to. I guess I'm just trying to build up why I believe that it's so worth it to watch the animated series, to just have a better appreciation for this show. Like I said, you can appreciate it without watching it, but like I said, there's so much that is missed without even, like, just watching Rebels, you know?
Yeah. So in that episode, The Lost Commanders from Rebels, it follows clone troopers Rex, Wolf, and Gregor.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So yeah, so that's my little spiel about, or not so little spiel about, why I believe that it's pretty essential to watch the animated series.
And that's my 3-hour rant about why you need to watch Rebels.
Yes, I could go on for 3 hours about that, but you know, I mean, that's how strongly I feel about the animated series, you know?
You know who I want to see in Ahsoka Season 2? I don't know how they could possibly do it, unless they do a side story with Ezra. I want them to revisit the Bendu from Star Wars Rebels. Remember the big giant force being?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That would be an interesting character to bring in. And I don't know what capacity, like how they would bring it in. But I was really surprised. And I guess maybe the reason why, like, there was such a huge absence. You know, we didn't have Zeb. I know Zeb was off doing his New Republic stuff, and he was probably going to show up in Rangers of the New Republic. So that's why he wasn't in 100%. Ahsoka. But oh my gosh, dude, like, he was such an essential character for Rebels that he was definitely missed. And I hope beyond hope that he is in Season 2. He has to be.
So they brought him back for Mandalorian Season 3 briefly.
Right.
And he looked great.
He did.
And I think because they spent so much time making him look right in live action, most people assumed, okay, he's got to show up in Ahsoka. But for whatever reason, he didn't. But pretty much the rest of the gang was present. You know, sans Freddie Prinze Jr.'s Kanan Jarrus. Because, you know, spoilers, but Kanan's dead. Actually, what's interesting is in the ghost ship, when Hera's flying it, someone noticed, like, by the steering wheel, she has a picture of Kanan Jarrus. And it actually looks like a picture of Freddie Prinze Jr. in, like, live action that they've, like, photoshopped into, like, with, like, his outfit. It's actually pretty funny if you go check it out.
I need to look at that. People, I don't think I paid attention to that. But that would be awesome if they did that. It's actually pretty crazy how much Freddie Prinze Jr., like, he loves Star Wars and he loves that character.
I know. Yeah, it's a great character. One of the best like character deaths ever in Star Wars is Kanan's. Let's talk, well, actually, while we're still in the world between worlds and we're talking about Anakin, there's one line that he says that gave me chills, bro. Ahsoka basically says something along the lines of, "I'm not going to fight you." And he goes, "I've heard that before." And so what's cool about Force Ghosts, and they don't really explain it in any of the shows or any of the films, but they touch on it in some of the books, is that they exist in like all time everywhere. You know, like they're not stuck to one body type. Like that's why they can change appearances, change ages. Sometimes they can appear as Darth Vader. Sometimes they can appear, he could appear as Little Annie if he wanted to. What's cool about that scene is that basically he's referring to an event that happened in the original trilogy. So actually, yes, this is chronologically after the original trilogy. So it's not like he's bouncing around in time, but it's so cool that he actually references the fact that, you know, Luke Skywalker basically said, "I'm not going to fight you, father."
Yes, I remember.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just my two cents. I think Hayden Christensen's return in that episode was amazing. I think for me, episode 4 was probably the strongest episode of them all. Maybe, was it episode 4 or 5? I forget if that was episode 4 or 5. But that was by far the strongest episode of, probably the strongest hour of Star Wars that I've seen in years.
It was, because, yeah, it was so good. They did really good with young Ahsoka. Like, it was believable.
Yeah, I forget the actress's name off the top of my head, but she also played a young Gamora in Infinity War and Endgame.
Yes, I think she was in something else too.
She's in the Barbie movie.
Yeah, she was in the Barbie movie. Yes, that's what I was thinking
of. She was the daughter.
Yes. So,
she's having a huge like boost in her career right now. There's a lot of stuff happening for her. So that's exciting.
Yeah, man. It had me like, man, you know, I'd love to see some of this Clone Wars stuff live action. You know, putting too much dip on my chip, man, you know?
But it's cool. A lot of people complained about like all the fog in those scenes. Did you have an issue with that?
I did not, because I knew it was there. It was there purposeful for effect. The Force Ghost of Anakin might exist in all time, but it's still kind of like a moment in time. I kind of saw it as almost like a Christmas Carol kind of moment, like where he brought her back into that moment, you know? He was honestly helping teach her a lesson. And it was essential because, you know, she's having issues with Sabine. And Anakin's like, I remember somebody giving me some issues also, you know? So, yeah, you know, true. I mean, remember how strong-willed Ahsoka is. The Ahsoka that we know in this show is not the Ahsoka from, you know, even Rebels, she's very wise. But in Clone Wars, she was very immature. She was always wisecracking. She always got on Anakin's nerve. But, you know, once she eventually, like, grew up, her character grew up, she was a solid, just, you know, she was annoying at first. I was like, this character is annoying. So yeah. I went through all that grime and I grew with that character. So I would say that, yeah, you know, there's a lot in the animated that's kind of essential to understand a lot that's happening now that I think about it. Like,
yeah, he's going back to the animated. You keep coming back to that.
Okay. Well, you know, it's,
yeah, everyone knows it's you just, gotta watch, yeah, the animated. One thing I want to touch upon, like, from my perspective of the visions that she had about like her time in the Clone Wars, I didn't see that as necessarily like flashbacks. Kind of like what you said, these are visions that are brought on almost by like the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. You know, it's not like it's actually happening, you know, what's being shown. This is just a vision that's brought on by the Force and a lesson being taught by, you know, her dead master, basically.
Right.
So it kind of works that she's not seeing the entirety of the war around her, because it's not like, a lot of people were saying like they had clear budget restraints, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Star Wars renders like huge vistas all the time when it comes to like anything in Andor, anything on Coruscant. It's always like huge and it's all CGI. Like, why would this have any difference in that respect? So it was a necessary choice by the creative team. Let's talk about Ahsoka's relationship with Sabine.
Right.
We know that in Clone Wars, Sorry, no, Sabine wasn't in Clone Wars. We know that in Rebels, Sabine never really showed any signs that she was Force sensitive, or that she had any Force sensitivity at all, unless I'm mistaken. But I was very surprised at the start of this series to find that Ahsoka had been teaching Sabine how to, you know, use the Force and to eventually become a Jedi. She was training Sabine in the ways of the Jedi. How did you feel about that?
I thought that was interesting. It definitely caught me off guard because I was like, I wasn't too sure about how I felt about that, because a lot of Rebels covered Ezra's journey as, you know, becoming a Jedi and his relationship with Kanan. And I don't know, like, I guess they were trying to mimic that dynamic between Ahsoka and Sabine. I feel like if that storyline wasn't there, I don't think it was necessary. Like, I don't think it needed to be there, but they went that route. So, I mean, it was interesting. Sabine did show some sort of Force sensitivity eventually.
Yeah, so I actually liked the change, or it wasn't necessarily a change. So old interviews with George Lucas, like if you go back and read, like anyone can learn the Force, but there are people who are generally, you know, naturally adept at it. They have natural talent. Sabine is not someone with natural talent.
Right.
And this is what Hu Young says about Sabine. Like, the Jedi would have never chosen her to be a Jedi. You know, like, she has the ability to learn how to wield the Force around her, but it was never something that she was sensitive to until she tapped into it, basically.
Right.
And I think by the end of the show, they had her fully tap into it and was able to, like, do huge feats of strength with the Force. What are your thoughts on her being able to, like, all of a sudden, she went from, like, not being able to use the Force to grabbing her lightsaber to then throwing Ezra 50 feet in the air? Because that was a quick pipeline of, like, 5 minutes.
I mean, so it was, but it wasn't the first time that she was trying to tap into it. Like, they showed that she had
a concerted effort.
We have to assume that before the show started, was trying to tap into that also. Because Hu Yang also was like, you're, like, one of the worst Jedi that I have ever met.
Yo, I love Hu Yang, and I hope that they keep him for a very long time. Him, voiced by David Tennant, is so special.
You can hear it. I can hear that that's him.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's partially why I want them to bring the Bendu back, because the Bendu is voiced by Tom Baker, who plays the fourth Doctor, and David Tennant obviously plays the tenth Doctor. If they can get Hu Yang to interact with the Bendu in any which way, which is, like, plausible considering the nature of the Force and the way that they express it in this show, and, like, the big entities that they are clearly trying to bring up in this series, I could definitely see it happening. So, but anyway, that's like a wild wish of mine.
I know you're trying to have some, like, Doctor Who interactions in Star Wars.
Of course I am. You know me. So I agree that the fact that she had been training for so long, mentally preparing herself to try and use the Force, and then finally unlocking that in a time of desperation, that would have been kind of almost like the floodgate opening, I guess.
I mean, we kind of had a moment like that with Luke. Remember, you know, it was almost like, I mean, he kind of trained, but it seemed like he was able to start using the Force, like, pretty quick too. Even though he was adept, even though that Darth Vader was his father, he still, you know, he still didn't have that confidence in him, you know, in the same way that Anakin had this, like, confidence to him.
I guess my big complaint here is that there's a difference between what Luke was able to do with the Force over the course of the three films versus what Sabine was able to accomplish 5 minutes after unlocking her ability to use the Force. So, like, she literally threw Ezra, like, 50 feet in the air. We never really see Luke do that in the original trilogy or anything close to that kind of, you know, Force power. But I kind of, like, digress a little bit. Like, obviously, they can't show everything that...
I've seen your boy use a Force jump, though.
Yes, but not 50 feet.
I mean, I don't know. It was pretty... I think it was pretty far. I don't know, like, what the scale of it was, but...
That's true.
But it's...
Anyway, it's a small gripe on my end.
Right.
It took me out of the story a little bit. I was just like...
It
doesn't seem like something she would naturally have the ability to do yet.
So I understand the Force push of Ezra, but the Force pull of the lightsaber handle is a little bit more believable.
100%. Yeah, no, and that's like totally 100% okay with me, because it was a moment of desperation, and she finally was able to tune into
She tapped into
the universe around her, basically,
in a time of need.
Yeah, and that totally makes sense, because that's what Luke did in when he was in the Wampa Lair, you know.
Yes, yes.
So that worked. That was totally fine with me. We haven't talked about Baylan Skoll or Shin Hadi at all, and we're now an hour into our discussion. I don't want to make this a 2-hour extravaganza, so let's go over some Shin Hadi and Baylan Skoll. How do you feel about these two new characters?
I actually really like them. I think that when they were introduced, they could have been the villains for the season. They could have had their own show, but I feel like they could have been the villains for the entirety of the season, and that we could have gotten a Thrawn reveal at the end of the season, and then his big season would have been the next season. Like, you know, I think that the build up to Thrawn, and, you know, because it was, that's what, like, half the season was the build up to Thrawn, and then you got to Thrawn, and then it's like, now you're receiving all this like new information. Whereas the way that the season ended, they could have done something similar to that, in the sense of, you know, Sabine is over and, you know, she gets brought over to that new place, and that's where we get our first glimpse of Thrawn, and then boom, because we have a season 2 obviously, but the next season is going to be, you know, them trying to find their way to the known galaxy.
Yeah. So I agree that the moment they introduced Baylan and Shin, it was just a huge moment for the series, because these are two characters that have like huge screen presence. And outside of Shin, like Shin Hadi was great in the sense that she's just kind of, you could tell she's an apprentice.
Right. She has unrefined talent.
Unrefined talent. She's angry. She's trying to prove herself. But she's also like simultaneously like shy and scared a lot of times. You could tell like there's like fear behind her eyes, even when she's like on the winning side. So I really liked that performance. I think that was such a strong performance. But the real standout performance for the entire show for me was Ray Stevenson's Baylan Skoll, dude. And it was so hard to appreciate it fully, because I knew that this was the last thing that this, you know, the actor Ray Stevenson did before he died. So I was like, I don't want to get attached to this character. I don't want to, you know, allow myself to like love these scenes. But man, every time he was on screen, it was like the best thing since sliced bread.
He was so good, but his character was so interesting, because I felt like he was like one of the few Sith that just didn't seem like they were consumed by anger.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think he was necessarily Sith, but he was definitely dark side leaning Jedi, you know? So he was raised as a Jedi, he lived through the Clone Wars, and he survived the Purge. But past that point, it seemed that he gave up on the Jedi path, but he stayed researching the Force and like the ancient, maybe Sith artifacts or relics or whatever.
Right.
And
like,
that's basically like what led him to Paridia, the planet in the other galaxy.
It's almost like him and Ahsoka are two sides of the same coin. Because remember, Ahsoka was also a Jedi, but she didn't completely abandon the ways, but she did abandon the Jedi.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, actually, I hadn't even considered that parallel, but it's true. While she's light side leaning, but not fully Jedi, he's dark side leaning, but not fully Sith. You know?
Right, so like they're kind of like gray. It's like two gray beings that he decided that I'm gonna be okay with using a lot more the dark side, whereas she was more of like, you know, I don't care about too much of the Jedi way, but I don't want to be bad, you know.
I've been thinking about like Baylan and Shin's saber color, because it wasn't a strong red, it was like a burnt orange. And likewise, Ahsoka's lightsaber isn't the typical blue or green that you would see for most Jedi, and even when she was a Jedi, she had, you know, typical Jedi colors in her lightsaber. So because she's light side leaning but not a Jedi, she wields white lightsabers, versus Baylan and Shin, who aren't fully Sith, so they're not using red lightsabers. They're using like a burnt orange because they're Sith leaning. That's a really cool parallel I hadn't even considered until just now.
And then Ahsoka's kyber crystals were, she cleansed kyber crystals of Inquisitors.
Yeah, so in the story that we know is, so it's kind of, it's up in the air a little bit because they made this book called Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston, and it does detail her taking down an Inquisitor and using the kyber crystals in his lightsaber to fashion two lightsabers for herself. And she, like, what's known as, like, bleeding the crystal, yes, like, turns the crystal red. She kind of, like, drained the crystal, and that's why it was white. So I thought that was a cool thing. That, I don't know that that story is still canon, technically, because the Tales of the Jedi episode with Ahsoka defeating an Inquisitor kind of overwrites some of the stuff that happens in that book. So it's a little bit up in the air, like, how, well, I mean, like, what really happened with her lightsabers. But I would assume something very similar happened with her lightsabers. What was I going to say? But yeah, I mean, I think that parallel between the different lightsaber colors is super cool. Let's talk about Ezra and Thrawn before we close this out. What do you think about Thrawn showing up?
Like, actually finally seeing the live action Thrawn, I was like, man, like, this is a bad guy, because, you know, I remember him from Rebels. And the setup of this story is essentially, like, kind of following Heir to the Empire.
Yeah, and they've even, like, teased that he is the heir to the Empire in Mandalorian Season 3 when there was that, like, Shadow Council of Imperial dudes.
Yes.
They were talking about, like, when Thrawn is coming back. So, one thing that I really liked about the Star Destroyer and the Stormtroopers over there was that they basically kept their armor in check by, like, by molding the cracks with gold.
Oh, yes.
So this is, what's it called? In Japanese, there's an art of, like, repairing broken clay vessels or broken glass with gold, and it's called kintsugi. And basically, this was definitely what Dave Filoni was, like, trying to invoke, was that, you know, it was almost like a ritualistic recreation of their armor so that it was even stronger and fiercer looking with all the, basically, repairs that they did to it.
Right.
It almost gave it a very similar thing with, like, Kylo Ren's mask in The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, yes.
Even though it wasn't, like, gold, so it wasn't technically kintsugi, it was kind of the same principle. And it gave his mask a little bit more menace.
I would say that this series leans heavier into the samurai and Japanese influence.
Totally.
That George Lucas had put into Star Wars. But yeah, this Thrawn was, you know, he's aged. So, like, you know, they definitely made sure to, like, age him up. But it was really cool to see him, and he definitely made some very Thrawn calls, like when Baylan went out to go chase down or to go after Sabine, he was like, well, they get stuck here, then they get stuck here. You know, he's like, they die. I don't care. I'm leaving.
What's funny about Thrawn for me is that I personally think that Dave Filoni writes him differently than Timothy Zahn writes the character. Timothy Zahn was the guy who made Heir of the Empire and created the character. And he's also written, I think, 6 books in canon that detail, like, Thrawn's exploits. And I feel like Dave Filoni needs to give Thrawn more wins, basically. So what I find happens a lot is Thrawn will do something, and then the heroes will overcome it, and Thrawn will be like, all according to my plan. And then it'll keep happening, and Thrawn's just like, still according to my plan. And it's just like, bull, you're getting, your plans are dumb.
It's more like, all according to the plan, but I'm secretly sweating on the inside, you know?
Yeah, he's just like, this is still acceptable.
No, you're right. I mean, you know, they, like, we have to see why he's the heir to the Empire. There's a reason why he would be so trusted to be the one, the next one to take over the Empire, to the one to lead the Empire back into power, you know? He's obviously. So, I mean, at least he got kind of a win this time, you know? He got away. So.
No, he totally did. So. He totally did. He got away. That was the most important part. So, I saw a lot of people, like, upset online about, maybe not a lot of people, but I saw the comments about people upset that Ezra and Thrawn got away, but Ahsoka and Sabine didn't. Like, they got stuck on Paridia. And I actually don't think that that's an issue, because what needed to happen, like, even if, hypothetically, if Thrawn came back and Ahsoka and Sabine also came back, the New Republic still wouldn't believe Ahsoka and Sabine that Thrawn was back in the known galaxy, you know? Like, they would still question. But the fact that Ezra got back, someone who was known to have gone exactly where Thrawn went, that shows that definitely Thrawn is back. You know, like, they would definitely believe Ezra.
Like, whoa, where did you come from? You know, that, yeah.
Yeah, you've been gone for like 10, 11 years.
Hey, you've been gone for quite some time, you know? I did like that initial interaction between Sabine and Ezra, because I felt like it was definitely like Rebels-esque.
What's funny about these characters is that, like, you know they have an emotional love for each other, but their actual relationship with each other is that of just friends.
Yes.
So you know Ezra crushes on Sabine, and you know Sabine grew to love Ezra, but they never show that in the show.
Yes.
So when they finally get back, it makes sense that they wouldn't, you know, like, immediately embrace and, you know, like, oh my god, love, because they didn't have that relationship.
It's like a punch in the shoulder type, you know? It's just like, you know, yeah, hey, what took you so long, you know?
Good to see you, bud. Where you been? We end the season with Ezra and Thrawn in the known galaxy. Ezra, you know, sees Hera again, so they obviously get that reunion. But along with Ahsoka and Sabine stuck on Paridia, that, like, that world, we also have Bail and Skull and Shin Hadi still over there as well. So I don't think they can really get rid of the character of Bail and Skull. I feel like they have to recast, because it's such an important, it's literally one of four people on this planet.
Yeah, yeah.
They're gonna have to do something. But and they left him with such a huge goal, because he said that he was being called and drawn by something, and then you see him at the end literally standing on, like, the Mortis God, the Father's hand, as it points to something in the distance.
Right, yeah. I'm just wondering who they'll go with, and hopefully it's a decent recast, you know? I mean, we've dealt with recasts in the past. I mean, you know, namely, like, Harry Potter was, like, one, like, a huge one with Dumbledore.
Yeah.
So, but, true. Yeah, and, you know, there's something that I noticed in this series, and I know that we're kind of, like, running into it, but I wanted to point this out, was that there were some aspects of the show that reminded me of things from the Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor, which is when Ahsoka went to go look for the star map, she was in an area that kind of reminded me of some of the ruins of Jedi Fallen.
The Zepho ruins, right?
Right, and the way that she had to do, like, a puzzle to get that map, it was very Jedi Fallen Order-esque.
Oh, yeah, you could tell Filoni was playing those games when he was writing that.
Definitely. And with the Night Sisters, we had the Night Sisters, and then we had that whole moment with the zombies, you know? And there's stuff like that in, especially Fallen Order. You go to Dathomir and there's, like, these zombies in the game. So that kind of reminded me of that also.
So I'm going to be a little controversial. I didn't really like the zombie stormtroopers. Not that I didn't like the concept. I think the concept was fine. I think it was the execution for me. Like, it just didn't, it, that whole fight at the end didn't seem very, like, it wasn't very cinematic. I don't know. Like, the way that everything was framed, everything was, like, too wide angle. Nothing was, you need more close-ups when you're doing, like, zombie stuff, you know? It needs to be scary, you know? And I feel like their use or their overuse of, like, the volume, that room that projects the entire image, that requires them to storyboard in advance. So they have to, like, nail down the shot before they even start filming. So there's no room to, like, do creative stuff with the camera. And I think that that really hurt that final battle. For me, anyway. I thought it was really blocky and didn't feel very fluid. And I wish they had spent more time with the zombie stormtroopers. But that's just me. I did like the Three Witch, the Night Sister subplot. I thought that was really compelling. And it made sense why they finally had to go to that world to begin with.
And I would say that another must watch so that you understand the, because, you know, there's a character from season 2 of The Mandalorian, you know, the one that introduces live action Ahsoka, you know, that sets up the series.
Yeah. Morgan Elsbeth.
Right. And it's like, okay, who is she? And why is she in the New Republic hands? you find out the reason in The Mandalorian is because Ahsoka faces her down.
Do you have any final words?
Well, you know, for me, my final words would be, if you want the ultimate Ahsoka experience, watch the animated series. And I watched at least that one episode of Mandalorian, if you haven't, called The Jedi in season 2.
That was a good one.
Dude, I loved that episode. It was amazing. But I mean, like, I know that I keep on coming back to the anime series, but I really feel like it does a lot for the series. It just does so much.
I appreciate that.
But yes, it's, you know, I think, and I thought that they did pretty well with Ezra too. I mean, we didn't really talk too much about Ezra. I think that they did a pretty good job with live action Ezra. I believed it was him. So
yes, I agree. It was definitely Ezra. They did a really good job casting that and nailing that.
And I like that he built his own new lightsaber. So that was cool.
That was cool. That was cool seeing that in live action. So how do you rank this show among the other live action Star Wars shows?
Ooh, that's tough. That.
So we have Mandalorian.
Mandalorian, I feel like it's always going to be number one because it's the first two seasons were absolutely strong. Even the third one was kind of blurred, but it had a decent storyline with the reclaiming of Mandalore. But you know, I like the characters. I still think it was really strong. I'm gonna put Boba Fett maybe at the bottom of all that.
Sure. We got Kenobi.
I'm biased with Kenobi because I like Ewan McGregor, but I might put it, so it's what, four live actions, right?
There's also Andor.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're, oh my gosh, yeah. So right, Andor, so here, Andor, I'll... and Andor's, oh my god. So Mandalorian, I'll probably put it like number one because like I guess maybe with all the fan service stuff and like how strong it is. Andor for sure. I mean, it could be number one, but Andor for sure will be next. A very close, very, very close second, like there, you know? Okay, it could bump that first, you know? You know, we'll see with the next season. It might bump it. So maybe, I feel like Ahsoka and Obi-Wan might be interchangeable. Ahsoka maybe a little bit more above Kenobi, but Boba Fett down there, man. It's down there.
That's rough. Yeah, so I agree with most of your list. I would put Andor at the top just because I never expected to see like prestige TV in a Star Wars format before, and that was just so good. So I would do Andor, then Mando, then Ahsoka, Kenobi, and Book of Boba Fett.
I think the reason why Andor wasn't there for me was because Andor wasn't for everyone, whereas Mandalorian was for a wider scope of Star Wars fans.
I agree.
But Andor, yeah, man, that's why I'm like, it's right there, man. It's like, man, it's like right there. Andor is like trying to push up on it, and it, dude, the next season might bust those gates open. So we'll see. I might be like, you know what, Dakota's right. I mean, I'm fighting myself a little bit. I'm like, man, like, did I put the right placement?
All right. So you heard it here first. Mando, then Andor for Anthony, and then Andor before Mando for me. But we're pretty set on Ahsoka being like the middle quality of all of these series. And that's a pretty good spot because, you know, Star Wars is still Star Wars. Whether we like it or not, it's still fun.
Right. It's like, it's not top tier, but it's not the worst.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for listening to us here on Peak Ecology, Project Ecology, for our 65th episode. You can find us on Twitter at Peak Ecology and Project Ecology on Instagram. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Bye.